In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Hello and welcome in to this Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you had a great weekend and you're ready for Monday. Yeah, we had a crazy weekend here in the heart of the beautiful Southlands. It was stormy. There were tornadoes. Lives were lost. Property was damaged. It was a bad weekend. And around our house, we lost power early Saturday afternoon and didn't get it back until late Sunday morning. There are those, however, who are still without power, even as I record this on this Monday morning, the 13th of January, 2020, and as we go live to Facebook for those who feel like joining in the live fun. It is it's a wet day in our neighborhood. We have rain forecast, thunderstorms and the like throughout the day. Nothing as severe as over the weekend. But back to around our house, we sat around in the dark. Literally, Saturday night. This is one of those little life lessons. And that is that even though you prepare, if you don't prepare your preparations, sometimes you find yourself in the dark. And that is that at some point in the past, I actually bought a storm lantern, something to tuck away and to use when the lights are out, so you can see how to get around the house and not trip over yourself and kill yourself in the bathroom and that kind of a thing. And so I bought this Coleman LED battery-operated rechargeable storm lantern, and I remember making it a point at the time, this needs to go someplace where we can plug this charger in and keep the battery charged. And somehow, at some point over the years, this lantern got shuffled from its place of appropriateness to being further and further out of sight because it was ugly or something. I don't know. At any rate, I found it buried in a closet, in a closet off the laundry, and pulled it out. And it was, of course, dead, which means it's useless, which means we have no lights. So I thought, well, at least I can get it someplace and put it back where it should be, where it's getting charged. It would be okay on that shelf in that closet if there were a power outlet in there and it would stay charged. But no, can't happen. So I go looking around for the charger. I can't find the charger anywhere. It's Monday. That was Saturday, and now it's Monday, and still no charger. So we made it a point to get out of the house because it was dark and because we didn't want to open the fridge. We didn't want to open the freezer. We just didn't want to endanger any of the food unless it goes on for days. You know, take as many precautions as you can to preserve what you've got invested in the pantry, in the freezer. So we get out and we find some Chinese food at a place that has power. And then we go shopping for a lantern. And we bought a little lantern, spent about $10 on a little LED lantern that would blind you if you have sunglasses on. It's just an amazing little lamp. The batteries in it were just garbage, but once I replaced the batteries with some decent batteries, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. I paid $11 for this little lamp, plus tax, and was kicking myself the whole time because that very morning I had been in a store. I'd been in a Harbor Freight tool store Saturday morning early, and they had a bunch of these lamps for about half that price. And I thought to myself, that would come in handy, wouldn't it? But did I pick it up? No. Why? I've got a lantern. Or so I thought. At any rate, great lantern. And we searched seriously. We went three or four different places, finally wound up at a Marvin's Hardware. And there amongst the flashlights and such, they actually had some lanterns. Nobody else did. Walmart was completely out. The Tractor Supply was completely out. The other places we went, no, I'm sorry, so the people have already bought those up. Or employees. I found out in one place, employees had bought them all up. That's good. Thanks, guys. Way to take care of your customers. But so we made it. We got some light, and that's good. And then the next morning, Sunday morning, a little 10-ish, 10:30-ish or so, the power comes back on. And then after dark last night, internet service comes back. And I was finally able to get back online. And I'd been using my cell phone, by the way. The cell phone is also a beast. It kept hanging in there for as long as it could. It finally gave up the ghost in the middle of the night, Saturday night. And so all day long, I'm twitching. I'm having withdrawals. The only way I can get online is I can't because I've got no way. I can't even use my cell phone with my one bar of cell service at the house. I can't even use that to get online. Yeah, I live out in the sticks, but finally it all comes back on and we're back together again. And I'm able to put together a stack of stories for us to talk about today. But holy cow, I'm not making light of a crazy weekend because I know that the three people lost their lives and I know that there was a lot of property damage. And I know this happens when we have severe weather in Alabama. It just does. And so does the absurdity that comes along with it, because we have people on every channel. They're breaking in. The meteorologists are breaking in and they're covering up the day's programming. They're telling people you need to go run for cover. They have a broad coverage area. They're on cable and satellite all across the state, and they have people watching them, depending on them to let them know when a tornado's barreling down towards their location. And so they break into the football games, they break into the movies, they break into whatever happens to be on at the time to let people know. And what happens? People complain. It just blows my mind. People complain. You should have seen some of the Twitter posts and the like that were shared by meteorologists after the storms went through. It's just crazy. Get this idiot off my TV. I want my football game. And why did you interrupt my program? This is stupid. I live 200 miles away from that. I don't need to see that. Yeah, well, the people who live right under that tornado were thankful they got a warning. You're not the only person in the world, Jackwagon. But there we are, people who only think about themselves. It's funny how we have a world filled with those people today and how they don't see the bigger picture because all they care about is the shiny thing that happens to be in front of them at the time. It's a sad thing. Here's an example. All of the stuff that's going on in America right now with Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats trying to destroy Donald Trump, his presidency. They're trying to destroy the man and his presidency. If you've been paying attention, you know that they have been trying to destroy him, his family, anybody attached to him. They're digging, looking for dirt. They're not finding anything, but they're doing what they can. And they're trying to be as successful about it as they can. And the only people, apparently, who seem to care about what the Democrats are doing happen to be their buddies in the leftist press. Well, you would think that since there's been an announcement that they're finally going to be sending the articles of impeachment over to the Senate this week, they're going to take a vote on it. I think it's tomorrow that's happening. You would think there would be some interest. Oh, this is all moving forward. No, they have beaten the horse to the point where it's not only dead, it's in pieces on the side of the road, and they continue to beat the pieces of the horse. So much so that right now, when you look at what's trending on Twitter and other social media platforms, the British royals are getting more attention than Pelosi and the Democrats. Yeah. A prince and his wife have decided they're going to step out from under the umbrella of the royal family and do their own thing, and that's what people care about. That's what people on social media are having a fit over. This is what they're discussing. Oh, it's all her fault. It's just so amazing what you see on social media that people care about. That's what's going on social media. Not interest in our government and what's actually happening in our real world here. They care more about misbehaving British royals than what poor Aunt Nancy and the Democrats are trying to do to our president. And that says a lot about the state of absurdity in America today. People care about the most insane things. If something had happened to a high-profile Hollywood celebrity, then that's what would have been the most popular thing on social media today. People care about the trivialities and not the truly important things. It's just crazy time. It's crazy, crazy. Here's another thing. Maybe if you were watching football over the weekend, you had power, and you were able to watch football over the weekend, maybe you noticed some ads by Michael Bloomberg. I've seen the ads. They're popping up all over the place now. And every time I see one of the ads, I shake my head and say, yeah, you can say that, but you can't do it. Because he talks about making things fair in America. He talks about all of the horrible things that are going on and the reason that people are suffering under the current administration and all of the thing and what he's going to change this. But if you're paying attention and you've got any knowledge of how civics in America works, you realize he's just making claims. He can't make any changes. As a president, he can't change what he says needs to be changed. There has to be cooperation in the other two branches of government. The president can't make the changes Michael Bloomberg is promising. He spent over $200 million on TV ads. Who cares? Nobody. He's not even showing up in the polls. He may have spent enough. He may have made enough of an impact to get on the stage for debates, but nobody cares about Michael Bloomberg. $200 million. Think about that. Think about the impact that money could have made on people in need. And speaking of people in need, what about Australia? Here's another example of absurdity. Australia's on fire. Like, if you've seen the maps, there's not much of it that's not on fire. It's one of the worst brush fire seasons they've ever had. 10 million hectares of land have been burned. 500,000 animals killed. 27 people dead so far. People around the world in response are stepping up to help. Individuals donating to organizations like the Red Cross and WIRES, New South Wales Wildlife Information, Rescue and Education Service, Inc. New Zealand and the U.S. have deployed over 150 firefighters to help battle the blazes. Australian natives like Nicole Kidman are using their platform and wealth to garner support. But there's one person who's done practically nothing to help Australia. Who would that be? Greta Thunberg.
How dare you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. She's posted on Instagram, probably tweeted about it, but, well, she's not doing much of anything except claiming that this is all a result of man-made climate change. She says, this has to change, and it has to change now.
How dare you?
Okay, sure, Greta. How's that going to happen? How is that going to change now? She's got nothing. You know, we're still waiting. Greta? Greta? No, nothing coming from Greta. She has no solutions for the change, and she's not going to have solutions for the change because she's just stirring an empty pot. Not a single link, no organization mentioned, no suggestions on places to donate, no advice on what legislation to support or politicians to contact, no policy proposal, nothing. She just yells at the Australian leaders and coal companies, again, over the new coal mines they're planning on building. Never mind if the coal will likely make its way into places like India, Indonesia, and Vietnam, where access to affordable power could be a life or death difference, and coal power is cheap power. Forget about the fact that many of the people in those countries have more pressing concerns than fighting climate change, like, I don't know, feeding their kids. The point is, Greta Thunberg is useless. She's a petulant child with anxiety struggles, and instead of helping her develop healthy ways of coping and teaching her something useful like climatology or engineering, people are indulging her ongoing breakdown. She's not influential. She's not a leader. She hasn't accomplished anything. We know that the fires in Australia were started by arsons, people intentionally setting fires. So Greta's 100% wrong. But she and those like her will never admit to that fact. And that is real life absurdity. Out there in the open in front of God and everybody, for everyone to see. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast today, whether you are jumping in on Facebook Live or you are listening via a podcast program of some kind on your mobile device or maybe your laptop or whatever. Thank you so much. There's so many ways. By the way, there's a bunch of different ways to find the podcast. You can, of course, go to the website. That's dailyperspectivepodcast.com. There's also Apple Podcasts. There's Google Podcasts. It's on Spotify. You can find it in the iHeartRadio app. And you can also find the podcast in the TuneIn Radio app. So regardless of how you choose, thank you. And if you subscribed, thanks again. And if you have shared, thanks again. That means a lot to me as well. And if you've given it a thumbs up or whatever on whatever platform you listen, I appreciate that as well. That helps a lot. It really does. And as I mentioned last week, there was a big bump in listenership in December. You know, that was last month. I spend too many hours a day in the dark in a studio. I can't remember what time of the year it is. But it was last month in December. There was a big bump, and I appreciate the fact that there's more of you there. Thank you so much. I appreciate you listening and sharing. Please do share and a little thumbs up. Okay. All right. Well, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, that darling Democrat from California, whose district is slowly sinking under a sea of human poo. She's keeping the Democrat dream of future witness testimony in President Donald Trump's impeachment hearings alive. Yesterday, she told ABC News This Week she believes the House will call former National Security Advisor John Bolton to testify, even though the House is set to vote tomorrow to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate for trial. Representative Adam Schiff, Shifty Schiff from California, the Democrat, and Democrat from New York, Jerry Nadler, their twin impeachment inquiries concluded more than a month ago, but failed to make an airtight case that the President Donald Trump should be removed from office. That's an opinion held by both independent voters, who quickly soured on the impeachment process, and even members of the mainstream press, who questioned why Schiff and Nadler failed to call key White House witnesses during scheduled hearings. You remember that the Republicans wanted to call key people. The Republicans wanted to have key people come and testify. And Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler both said, no, we're running the show. Shut up and sit down. In other words. So, there was the opportunity, but it was denied. And now they're making noises like they really want to call. They really want to call Bolton? Pelosi and her Senate counterpart, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, plotted to withhold the articles of impeachment from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in order to force McConnell to allow testimony from Bolton and acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney during the course of Trump's Senate impeachment trial. But the effort failed when McConnell marshaled enough votes to move forward with the process without Democrat input. You see, Nancy Pelosi tried to bully the Senate and dictate how they would operate. And it backfired on her. There are those who are saying, a few, saying publicly that they believe this was also political with regard to the candidates running for the Democrat nomination. Because the DNC wants Joe Biden. They wanted things stretched out as long as they possibly could to interfere with the campaigns of those senators who are running, because they would have to be in Washington to be actively involved. So if they're in Washington, D.C., they can't be on the campaign trail. And that leaves Joe Biden out there with all the cameras, the spotlights, and the focus on him. Which, when you think about it, could actually be a bad thing for Joe. Well, now, Pelosi, who has forced us, was forced to schedule a vote to send the articles to the Senate for tomorrow, Tuesday. She says the House impeachment inquiry isn't over. Democrats may decide to call Bolton to testify about a possible quid pro quo between Trump and Ukrainian officials regarding an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter, even though the articles of impeachment are already published. And even though every witness, all of the witnesses they called, that they allowed, said, no, not there. Didn't see it. No quid pro quo. She said on this week, Sunday, yesterday, it's not excluded. She's referring to that possible House subpoena for Bolton. We do think there's enough evidence to remove the president. How do you know when Nancy Pelosi is lying? She's breathing. She says, we have done our job. We hope the Senate would do that as well. It's about a fair trial. See what I said? They take an oath to have a fair trial, and we think that would be with witnesses and documentation. Now the ball's in their court to either do that or pay the price. Really? What price would that be, Aunt Nancy? People are already more interested in the British royals misbehaving than they are you and your weird little plan to destroy the president. Senior Democrats raised the possibility of subpoenaing Bolton last week after Bolton himself admitted that if asked to testify by the Senate, he'd comply, though he didn't speak on whether he would do the same for a House subpoena. And he did reference Republicans specifically. So if the Republicans called him, he said he would go. The Republicans. The theory seems to be, according to a plan of action outlined by former advisors of President Barack Obama on the left-leaning site Crooked, if Bolton's called to testify in the House and provides information critical to the case against the president, that Senate Republicans will have no choice but to allow witnesses at Trump's Senate impeachment trial. The plan isn't airtight. Schiff deliberately avoided allowing certain witnesses, Bolton and Mulvaney among them, as I mentioned earlier, to testify at the House inquiry, apparently out of fear that their accounts might bolster, not harm, the White House's case, which was pretty much the case with everybody that spoke. Once they actually got cross-examined, it turned out they didn't know what they were talking about, and those that did know what they were talking about confirmed the fact that there was no quid pro quo. If Bolton does provide some evidence against the president and the Senate accordingly opens the floor to witness testimony, Republicans would then be allowed to call their own parties to answer questions from a Senate panel. The GOP has been clear all along that if witnesses are allowed, it intends to call Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the elusive whistleblower, whose account of a call between Trump and Ukrainian officials give rise to the impeachment inquiry itself. I will add that if that whistleblower actually even exists. Pelosi, without options, has scheduled a vote on whether to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate for tomorrow, for Tuesday. We will see what happens. We will see what happens. But again, if there are going to be witnesses in the Senate trial, then this finally becomes a fair process. Finally. When the Republicans actually have the opportunity to bring people forward. When the president and his counsel actually have an opportunity to address their accusers. When due process will actually take place. And the Democrats can no longer railroad the process and push through their side, their version of things, rather than reality. Because what we've got so far is just what the Democrats claim. And every time their claim is examined a little more closely than they would like, it begins crumbling. That's inconvenient for them. Also, in an interview yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi left the door open to new articles of impeachment against President Trump. George Stephanopoulos asked her, "You said he's violated the Constitution again and again. Do you think it's possible the House may have to file new articles of impeachment?" And Nancy responded, "Well, let's just see what the Senate does. The ball will be in their court soon. And as I say, the American people have been very fair in saying, yes, we do want to see witnesses. That wasn't part of the discussion 3 weeks ago." Once again, how do you know Nancy Pelosi is lying? She's breathing. I would suggest that this Thursday, that you watch her press address. She addresses the press every Thursday morning. She stands in front of them. She says what she has to say. She answers a few questions. And sometimes she wags her finger at them and lectures them. Sometimes she argues with them and accuses them of things. But she does talk to the press. And I'm not the only one. There have been many who have said, it appears that she addresses the press after a few drinks. I'm not saying that's true, but she stammers around, has trouble composing her thoughts. You be the judge.
A bunch of crap.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty much every time Nancy Pelosi speaks. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Monday edition of the podcast. Good to have you along. Again, thanks for being there. Hey, I don't know if you saw this, but looking at social media, let me get back to change back to my where I was. Over the weekend, there were some nominations, Academy Award nominations. And Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, was nominated for 3 Academy Awards. Best Visual Effects, Best Score, and Best Sound Editing. There's nothing there for the story, nothing for the actors, nothing as far as, they wasn't nominated for Best Picture or anything like that. But when it comes to the technical aspect, it's really racking them in. The Best Visual Effects, Best Score, Best Sound Editing. So the folks at Industrial Light and Magic should be very, very happy about now. George Lucas's company. Oh, I tell you, that company revolutionized the movie industry. It just completely revolutionized the movie industry. A lot of people, rightfully so, don't like the Star Wars prequels. Now, there's an entire generation of people who have come up, and that's the only Star Wars they really know. They saw those movies, those 3 movies, as kids, and that is Star Wars to them. And the original trilogy, oh, that's those old Star Wars movies. They were kind of okay. But there is this generation that has come up on the prequel trilogy. I know I can talk sometimes. But George Lucas, when he was making those prequels, as questionable as they may be, as weird as they may be, he broke some serious ground in movie making with all of the digital technology, because no longer were they shooting on film. They were shooting on high definition video. They were using computers to create things that were not there. They were shooting in front of gigantic green screens in the background. And even today, that's still going on. And today, when you watch a movie like The Rise of Skywalker, you see things happening that are so realistic, it's impossible to tell where the line between the computer imagery and the real camera imagery is. And that's how far we've come. It's just amazing what they can do. Even the little drone droid BB-8. I saw a behind the scenes thing on how that he's done the other day, and it's just amazing that so much of what you assume about one character is just now we painted the guy in the blue suit out, and the little rig he's pushing around and the controls he uses and all that stuff, and there's somebody pushing that little droid around most of the time. And on the red carpet, yeah, it's radio controlled. They had to develop one for that. But when it comes to actual location shooting where it has to be someplace and perform, there's a guy in a blue costume that they digitally paint out of the background, and there's a rig connected to him, and they turn him so you can't see the rig so they don't have to paint much out, but they still do. It's just amazing what they can do, and they're up for awards for those visual effects and the music and the sound editing. If you've seen the movie, you know when it comes to those three categories, it's right that it actually got those awards. Let's get back to the news. I told you last week a couple of times that the people of Iran aren't happy. They're living under the thumb of a dictator. They are being manipulated and controlled at every turn. And we are getting more and more news of the validity of those statements. For example, let me look here and see, is that in my list? Yes, it is. I'll get to that in a couple of minutes, so I'll sidestep that. But I saw an account from someone who is a missionary to Iran, an evangelist, a missionary, who works with the people of Iran. And you stop and think about it, considering how Islam is operated in Iran, that's almost a suicide mission. Because if you're caught, you will disappear. You will be charged. You will be found guilty. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're doing or what you were not doing. You will be charged and found guilty, and you will rot in prison where you'll be beaten, or you'll just be killed someplace and never be seen again. And this is a person who has decided, for the sake of the gospel, to take that chance and to deal with these people. And this person has written home saying, The people I deal with and talk to every day are deeply unhappy with their life here. The business owners are being told to shut their businesses down and participate in a funeral of a man they hated. The people were told to wail and cry. The people were given scripts about what to say and how to respond to the press. The people are being controlled by the government. There was no outpouring of support and grief for this General Soleimani, this terrorist. It was all manipulated by the Iranian government for the sake of the press. And now, there are people openly demonstrating against the government. There are people who have finally said, enough is enough. We have the attention of the world. Please know that we are unhappy, that we are oppressed, and the government is a dictatorship. And as a result, the Iranian government is doing what every dictatorship does. It once again is killing its own people. The Iranian government opened fire with live ammunition against demonstrators who were protesting the Islamic regime for shooting down a Ukrainian passenger plane last week and then lying about it for days. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, which is a designated terrorist organization, shot the plane down late on Tuesday night after firing numerous missiles at U.S. forces in Iraq. The New York Times reported, for the first 3 days after the crash, Iran denied growing international accusations that it had shot the plane down and looked as if it was engaged in a cover-up. The Iranian authorities insisted that the jetliner had gone down for mechanical reasons and refused to cooperate with investigators. They also began to remove some evidence from the scene. Now, this is what I was talking about last week. I told you, my gut was telling me these people were lying to the world, that they were responsible for the plane going down, that somebody pushed a button, and they made it happen. And now we know that to be true. Also, a story that started percolating up through all of the other stuff on Friday and over the weekend was that part about evidence being removed from the scene. When officials from Boeing and other representatives arrived on the scene in Iran, where this plane went down, there was nothing to inspect. Iran had removed the debris, and what had been left behind was being picked over and walked and taken away in the hands of citizens there. They were taking it. There was no security. There was no inspection. The state dictated what would be known. That is the operation of a dictatorship. Massive protests erupted across Iran over the weekend and at least a dozen cities, and Iran responded by firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and eventually live ammunition to disperse demonstrators. That's according to the New York Times. The Times later noted that multiple people had been shot and that other protesters were beaten. President Donald Trump warned Iran about attacking protesters yesterday. He tweeted, "To the leaders of Iran, do not kill your protesters. Thousands have already been killed or imprisoned by you, and the world is watching. More importantly, the USA is watching. Turn your internet back on and let the reporters roam free. Stop the killing of your great Iranian people. To the brave, long-suffering people of Iran, I've stood with you since the beginning of my presidency, and my administration will continue to stand with you. We are following your protests closely and are inspired by your courage." That's what he wrote on Saturday. And he adds, "The government of Iran must allow human rights groups to monitor and report facts from the ground on the ongoing protests by the Iranian people. There cannot be another massacre of peaceful protesters, nor an internet shutdown. The world is watching. Unlike previous waves of opposition, some of the outrage this time has come from conservatives who ordinarily support the government, as well as from the usual critics," according to the Times. They also say headlines in hardline newspaper demanded resignations, and the commander-in-chief of the Revolutionary Guards, General Hossein Salami, issued a very rare public apology. The editor-in-chief of the Revolutionary Guards Tasnim news agency, Kian Abdullahi, said that the attempts by government officials to lie about what had happened were as great a catastrophe as the crash itself. The Times noted that protesters chanted, "The supreme leader is a murderer. His regime is obsolete. Our enemy is right here. They lie to us that it's America. And they killed our geniuses and replaced them with clerics." And that's what happened when Islam took over Iran. The people who were actually geniuses, who knew what they were doing, knew what they were talking about, knew how to run a country, were inconvenient. And so they killed them all and replaced them with people loyal to Islam. Sounds a lot like communism, doesn't it? Other videos from protests in Iran showed protesters refusing to walk on flags of the United States and Israel that were painted on the ground. BBC reporter Ali Hamidani tweeted a video that showed student protesters refusing to walk on a giant American and Israeli flag painted on the ground, and wrote, "At the height of the Iranian establishment anti-Americanism, Tehran Beheshti University students refused walking over the U.S. and Israel flag while participating in Iran protests. They all grew up to hate the two countries, but seems like the revolutionary ideology is failed." Masih Alinejad, an Iranian journalist, tweeted, "Watch how Iranian students refused to step on American and the flag of Israel. This should embarrass the Iranian regime and their propaganda funeral for Soleimani, where people were told to chant 'Death to America.' Now people in Iran are chanting 'Death to Islamic Republic dictatorship.'" The Middle East Media Research Institute tweeted, "Students at Beheshti University of Tehran refuse to walk over U.S. and Israel flags and boo the people who do." On Saturday, protesters chanted, "Death to liars, death to the dictator, so many years, so many crimes, death to the Islamic Republic, and Soleimani was a murderer, his leader is also a murderer." The people of Iran are turning on their leadership. And their leadership is killing them for it. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Back to Iran. Yashir Ali, one of Twitter's most beloved users, called out some of President Donald Trump's opponents in a viral Twitter thread early yesterday. In a series of tweets that were widely circulated, Ali, who is of Iranian descent, said that some on the left are using the Iranian people as a tool to attack President Trump. To back his claims, Ali said that many of the most active and prominent liberal Twitter accounts ignored the latest anti-government protests in Iran, orchestrated by citizens angry that the Islamic Republic lied about shooting down a Ukrainian passenger jet last week. And he said, here are some of his tweets. I'm told that there will be expanded protests Sunday night in Iran. These things are always subject to change, particularly with intimidation from the government. So the question is, what kind of support are the Iranian people going to get from the external world? Yesterday, I tweeted this thread and was criticized by liberals who are intent on blaming this plane crash on President Trump. As I note in my thread, the idea that he's to blame for a decision the IRGC made is just absurd. And he refers back to that in that tweet, says, the idea that the U.S. is to blame for the Iranian military shooting down a civilian plane in its own airspace is patently absurd. Mistakes happen, but the fog of war is not to blame here. And the Iranians need to take responsibility for not shutting down civilian air traffic. He goes on to say, I've gone through some of the most active and prominent liberal Twitter accounts, and none of them mentioned the Iran protests today. These same people were actively tweeting about wanting to avoid war and attacking Trump for his decision. What happened? And that's why I tweeted this earlier today. In this context, Iranians are being used by certain people on the left, I didn't say all, as a tool to attack President Trump. But these same people don't seem to care to support their right to protest? The protests, Ali went on to say, were an inconvenient fact for those who continue to blame Trump for the escalating situation in Iran. Ali said, it seems to me the protests were inconvenient for some of these folks today. They were placing the blame on the Iranian leadership, who lied repeatedly about what happened. They weren't blaming President Trump, so it wasn't worth it to bring attention to or support them. He said, it seems to me, this happens often when with people living in authoritarian states with certain religious ethnic groups, we're used as tools to push domestic political agendas. We're told that to feel and think by people with no connection to our country and have no idea what they're talking about. We're told what to feel and think by people with no connection to our country and have no idea what they're talking about. Earlier in the thread, he said Iran is a tinderbox internally because Iranians are furious with Tehran for lying about what brought down Ukraine International Flight PS752, which resulted in the deaths of all 176 people on board the plane. What brought down the plane? The Iranian government completely mishandled the plane crash, destroying evidence in the process. Iranians are in the street calling for death to the supreme leader. That's something that could get them executed. Iranians are in the street calling for prosecutions, saying Soleimani is a murderer, telling leadership of the Iranian government to resign, and saying that Trump isn't the problem, that the Iranian government is. To say these protesters are brave is an understatement. And these anti-government protests continued into Sunday. And we now have reports, as I mentioned before, that the Iranian government is firing live rounds on the people. The people learned the truth. The people found out their government lied to them. The people finally reached a tipping point. And they're protesting in the streets. You're not seeing pictures of that like you did for the crowds for Soleimani's funeral. you remember seeing those pictures on the news media. You could flip through the news channels and see picture after picture, crowds in the streets. But you're not seeing all of the pictures like of the protests in the same way. You're not getting the volume. They're not showing as much. They're not focusing on it as much. And the reason is that to focus on that reveals the truth. That the government of Iran is corrupt. It is a dictatorship. It is lying to the world around it. It's lying to its own people. And the people know it. And they've reached a tipping point. And they're standing up against it. And sadly for the people, what's going to happen is more death. In spite of the fact that our president has told them repeatedly, the world is watching you. Their worldview tells them not to care because they're right. And it is their right to kill the people who stand against them. That's how they see the world around them. That's horrible. But that's how things are in a country run by Muslim hardliners. And that is Iran. In Lebanon, Hezbollah said yesterday, it was time for Iran's allies to begin working to retaliate for the killing of Major General Qassem Soleimani. Though it would be a long path to the goal of ejecting U.S. forces from their region, Syed Hassan Nasrallah also denied the Iranian general had been planning to blow up U.S. embassies. U.S. President Donald Trump said he'd been killed after he landed in Baghdad in part because they were looking to blow up our embassy. Hezbollah, a heavily armed group designated as a terrorist organization by the United States, was established in 1982 by Iran's Revolutionary Guards and is an important part of a regional Tehran-led alliance known as the Axis of Resistance. Iran responded for Soleimani's killing by launching missiles at two military bases in Iraq that housed U.S. forces last Wednesday. Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, called it a slap on the face of the United States and said U.S. troops should leave the region. Though the region remains tense, both sides have backed off from intensifying the conflict since the Iranian attack. Nasrallah said last week that Iran's allies, which include the Syrian government and numerous parliamentary groups set up with Iranian support in Iraq and Syria, should help exact revenge for Soleimani's killing. He said in his speech yesterday, "I believe it is time for the Axis of Resistance to start working. The resistance forces are serious and aiming for the big goal that I proposed," he said, referring to the objective of seeing U.S. forces leave the region. Retaliation would happen in the coming days, weeks, and months, he said, adding, "This is a long path." Explaining the decision to kill Soleimani, Trump said last Thursday they were looking to blow up our embassy. He also said the United States carried out the strike because of a rocket attack on a U.S. military base in Iraq by an Iran-backed militia in December that killed a U.S. contractor, which U.S. officials believe Soleimani had a role in orchestrating. Nasrallah said, "Trump is lying to his people. Haj Qassem Soleimani was not planning to blow up American embassies." How can you tell one of these guys is lying? The same way you can tell Nancy Pelosi's lying. They're breathing. The United States holds Hezbollah responsible for the suicide bombing that destroyed the U.S. Marine headquarters in Beirut in October of 1983, killing 241 servicemen, and a suicide bombing the same year on the U.S. embassy. Hezbollah is another Islamic terrorist organization, and they have vowed revenge. Do they care about their people? No. They care about dominance and conquering the world. They care about submission. That is everyone else submitting to them. They don't care about their people. They care about power. And you need to know as much as you can find out about these people and what they're doing. Do your homework, do some digging, and learn what they're really all about. That's it for today. God bless you. Have a great Monday. See you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.